Hello and welcome to the Lebanese Politics Podcast. My name is Nizar Hassan and joined as usual by Benjamin Red. How are you, Ben?
I'm doing good. I'm excited about today's episode.
Yeah, it feels weird to be doing this the second week in a row, but also absolutely exciting. So yeah, we started last week with an episode that kind of summarized the last 4 years in terms of what major developments happened and what the situation looks like in 2022 compared to 2018. So we passed through things like Thawra, like explosion, but also the political dynamics. And this time we're going to focus more on alliances and strategy in this election.
Yeah, so last week it was sort of like this big picture type thing that we were looking back at all these 4 years, and now we get into the meat of things, into like the real politics and how the different political groups are, you know, facing this new reality. And there were two things that you mentioned last week. That was the withdrawal of the Future Movement from politics, and also what is going on in the Christian arena that we're really going to dive pretty deep on. But it's not just limited to that. We're also going to be talking about the opposition groups, what we called civil society in the last election. And there's sort of like this new incarnation of that in the coming election, as well as we need to get a bit into just sort of the financing and the money aspect of this a bit as well, because that helps explain some of these strategies as well.
Exactly. So we're trying to give you an idea of how basically forces in the establishment or in the ruling class, as well as in the opposition, and economic actors or economic interests are at play in this election. Not, you know, this cannot be a comprehensive episode on all of these things to see certain patterns or major observations we can see in this.
Right. I mean, there is so much going on right now that we can't just, you know, get into every single little detail. I mean, it would be so boring for our listeners to go through district by district, who's running against who and who's allying with who. That's not really the point of this episode, but we hope that in examining the trends that we see, along with a lot of examples, that we'll be able to give you guys a broad overall picture of what these strategies are and what the main alliances are.
And to give basically a little disclaimer as we start, we will be talking a lot of sectarian language in this episode. Not because this is how we see politics or this is how we believe politics should be. It's because the current electoral system in Lebanon and the current political system revolves around sectarianism to a huge extent. So you cannot understand reality without understanding sectarian dynamics, especially when it comes to elections, especially when it comes to these elections as well, where there are different dynamics of different opportunities and political opportunities in different areas according to sectarian alignment. So as we will see in this episode, this is really the reality that we're trying to read rather than us putting this framework on what's happening.
Exactly. You can't get away from the sectarian dynamics because it's literally written into the law, right? And so different political actors are going to naturally, you know, it becomes a reality. You know, people base their strategies on that. And so we're going to start out with, I guess, more the sectarian side of things and then hopefully get a little bit broader. And first off, obviously, is the withdrawal of the Future Movement, right? The Future Movement, I mean, we don't need to explain what that is, but it is, you know, the main Sunni political grouping in the country, or at least it has been until now. And now that Saad Hariri has decided to pull back from politics, it leaves this huge void that a lot of different actors are trying to figure out how to fill. And it leads to quite a bit of sort of chaos, I think, if you actually look at the lists. So, I mean, I think one place that's very instructive of this is if we look at Tripoli. And there in Tripoli, you have this strange situation where, okay, so Mustaqbal has taken a step back, but not all of the members of Mustaqbal have taken a step back. And so here we see this strange situation where people like Mustafa Alush, who was, you know, the vice president, one of the vice presidents of the Mustaqbal movement, you know, former MP, he's running again, but not as Mustaqbal, but he's managed to bring along with him another big Mustaqbal figure from Danieh, Sami Fatfat, who is a sitting MP running for re-election. But this is only a partial thing of what's going on within sort of like the Future Movement ranks, or I don't know if they're former Future Movement now, because there are other members of the Future Movement or people who were previously allied with the Future Movement who aren't going on this list, but rather going somewhere else. And so we have, for instance, Osman Alameddine, who is the Sunni MP for Minye, just north of Tripoli in the same electoral district. He has signed on to Ashraf Rifi's list. Ashraf Rifi, as you'll recall, is the former head of the ISF, and then he was a justice minister. He was associated with the Future Movement back in the day, and there was a falling out. He ran against the Future Movement in local Tripoli elections in 2016, and then he ran again in 2018, but didn't get any seats nationally. But he's back this time, and he has somebody who brought a lot of votes to the table for Hariri in the last election.
Yeah, and it's important to remember here that Rifi, allying with LF, is also taking a certain strong stance against the future leadership, because Jaja and Hariri are not on good terms now. There's a certain dynamic of fighting for the Sunni anti-Hezbollah vote between the two. But Hariri being out of it, the Lebanese forces want Sunni allies who are against Hezbollah. You know, that's their primary project, and Ashraf Rifi meets that.
Right. So you've got Osman Alameddine going with Ashraf Rifi and the LF. You have Alush and Fatfat going their own way. And then another really big thing in Tripoli is Karim Kabara, who is the son of Mohammed Kabara, longtime MP for Tripoli, he's not a card-carrying member of the Future Movement or anything, but he has always been allied with the Future Movement, run on their lists, etc. His son, now he's handing the reins over to him. He's got, you know, his own political machine up there in Tripoli. He's handing the reins over to his son, and his son is going to Makati's list, which is a really, really big deal. So essentially what we have going on in Tripoli is sort of this fracturing of what was the Future Movement going in very different directions.
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising for Kabara to go with Prime Minister Mikati, with the Hariri being out of the scene. We know that Mikati's electoral machine in Tripoli is very strong. His clientelist network is very strong. Kabara has his own clientelist network. He has his own little group, let's just call it this way. So these figures, it's important to remember that when these figures ally with one group or another, it matters much less to their basis than we sometimes assume from afar, because the kind of political loyalty that they enjoy is not the same as Hariri's loyalty, a national figure, or Jaja or whatever. It's much more local, material, connected to, you know, like who's benefiting from this specific Zaim in this area.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that local versus national aspect of it, because when we're talking about Mikati, he's quite clearly trying to build himself more and more as a national figure. What we've seen before is that Mikati's, you know, run lists in Tripoli. A lot of people expect he might be nominated for a fourth term after the elections. Now he is taking his own name off the ticket in Tripoli, which gives him certain other benefits. He's allowed to kind of say, I'm sitting out the elections, which sounds like, you know, kind of in solidarity with Hariri, while, you know, still running a list both in Tripoli and in Akkar. He's expanding up to there, running his own list for the first time. I think this speaks to sort of, it seems to be sort of a national ambition. You know, he is the prime minister after all. and he wants to make that more of a reality on the ground. And getting Kabara as well in Tripoli is very, very important, because if you remember in the last elections, Mikati was criticized. He did get the most votes, like personally, out of anyone in Tripoli, but he was the only Sunni candidate on his slate to actually get elected, which I've heard from several people that sort of struck at the legitimacy. If you're a Sunni leader, you should be able to get more than just yourself elected in a largely Sunni constituency, right? You should be able to bring along other people. And with him stepping back and putting other Sunnis in who are going to run on his ticket, that allows him to sort of gain some of that sectarian legitimacy that people say last time he lacked. And that's not all that Mikati has going for him this time around. He has nominated Sleiman Obeid, who is the son of Jean Obeid, who passed away. He was an MP on Mikati's list. So he's going with voices that are known, or their families are known at least, as Mikati allies. And Kazem Kheir from Minye is also on this list. Kazem was on the list last time as well, on Mikati's list in 2018. But before then, he was a future movement MP for Minye. So you can see Mikati slowly sort of moving into the future space that that's being left by Hariri. And the other thing with this as well is, you know, Kazem Kheir is relatively young. Sleiman Obeid, obviously, you know, he's a new face, the son of Jean Obeid. And Karim Kabara as well is young. And then also Karim Kabara, you know, another young face. So that actually it makes Mikati's list look quite a bit younger, which is something I think that a lot of the electorate probably wants to see. They don't want to see the same old faces. They don't want to see just a bunch of old men. And even though these are the same, a lot of the same names, at very least they're a little bit younger.
Yeah, I don't know how much that matters. I hope it won't a lot, because these are directly the sons of these people. You know, it's not like new faces, new blood, etc. These terms that are usually used. Similarly to Michel Mur, which we will talk about later maybe, these people who just inherit seats are seen by people usually as an extension to their families. And in Tripoli, the amount of tension that exists between these traditional zaims and the people involved in the uprising and in the protests throughout these years, because don't forget that Tripoli was considered to be the heart of the uprising at many points. And it was maybe the most radical, the most advanced area in terms of like its discourse and its demands, etc. But also because Tripoli was such an important city in the uprising, and we know that Tripoli's population is not excited about establishment politics. We know that from voter turnouts, you know, in previous years, and we know that from the environment, the social environment and political environment in Tripoli. So you have a lot of people who are trying to come in and say, no, we are the alternative. So we have weird phenomena like Omar Harfouch, the guy who once appointed himself head of like Lebanese government abroad when the October uprising was happening. He has lots of money, and he's spending and doing all of these ads and billboards and stuff. You have also Ihab Matar, another rich guy who has his own list and is trying to basically to win a seat. And Matar brought people from who used to be part of Future or Mikati's electoral machines to run his campaign. You also have Baha al-Hariri. Baha al-Hariri is this weird actor that's not really all in or, you know, absent. So he supported the formation of a list. But after the list was actually formed and registered, two women on that list said that they are withdrawing and they are no longer working with this list because of a conflict with Baha al-Hariri and Sawa Lubnan, which is Baha al-Hariri's organization. So he's not on very good feet going into Tripoli at all at this moment, but we don't know whether that will translate into votes or not. And then you have the opposition. The opposition in Tripoli is probably one area where it's quite disappointing how it ended up being turning out. Why? Because we don't even have what we have in many other areas, which is a list that combines many different groups or activists from these groups, from opposition groups, etc. That's because a lot of them don't exist in Tripoli at all. The only party that ran its own list from the opposition is Muwatinun Muwatinat Fi Dawla. From now on, we will say MMFID. It's an abbreviation. It's much easier to pronounce. I'm not going to say Sharb al-Nahas because it's much bigger. I'm not going to say Muwatinun. And MMFID run in their own list in Tripoli. And it's probably the only like kind of clear opposition list. Because the other list that has opposition members has, for example, really? Like, do you want to come in the studio? Fuck sake, man. So MMFID's list is probably like the only clear opposition list in the sense of like, of this kind of opposition, secular, democratic, pro-social justice, etc. The other list that includes an opposition party, the National Bloc, with Kamil Mourani, is in this weird alliance with Brigadier General Hamoud, who in Tripoli does not have the best reputation in terms of being involved in clashes between Tibbani and Jabal Mahsin.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, of course. They have another person who was part of the Future Movement before. We have some faces that were kind of became famous in the protests. And we have a sheikh from Menye who is quite conservative. Can I mention that he has two wives? No, that's private. And Malik Maulawi, who used to be Sab'a. It's a weird list. It includes people from very different backgrounds, so I don't really understand how it came together. But this is the situation. Tripoli and this district is a place where there's maybe the largest concentration of the working class in Lebanon in terms of voters. This is a very poor, very marginalized area controlled by rich people, ultra-rich people, politicians, who exploit the city but don't bring back any significant resources of or development into it. This has been the situation. It's a place where nobody really controls politics. No one's aim dominates it. So it's very sad. Actors that are progressive, not very strong there or very present there. We will see. Maybe Memfid will make a certain surprise, but things are not looking great for the opposition there.
And we also have to mention along with this that Karami is still running again, but his list hasn't changed too much. He's running again with Jihad Samad from Dunia, who made it last time, and with Taha Naji of the Ahbash, who almost made it in last time. It seems as though he's sticking sort of to the same sort of strategy. So you have Makati on the one hand, who seems to be trying to reach out. You have the Future Movement that's just sort of collapsed and is going in different directions. You have Karami, who's just sort of doing the same thing. It largely
trying to stay, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And then you have these different opposition groups and all of that bubbling up, but it's questionable how much traction they're going to actually get come election day.
Yeah, especially that all of the money is somewhere else, you know.
Right.
So we're going to talk about money in a second, but it's the reality.
Right. And moving on from Tripoli, there are a few other places I think that we should look at very quickly, because we can start to see kind of in many cases, the common thread going through them. So especially with the Future Movement sort of splintering, if we go a little bit north to Akkar, then we start to see some of the same kinds of things. I mean, like we mentioned before, Makati is expanding. The Future Movement is fracturing there as well, though. We have three future movement MPs who are deciding to run on sort of their own list. We have another former MP who is actually the father of a current future MP, Tariq Merabi's father, Talal Merabi, is running. Tara isn't on the ballot this year. His father is coming back, but he's not running with these other future MPs. He's running on a list that includes Khaled Dahir, who's formerly associated with the Future Movement, and then there were some problems, but he had some sort of relationship with the Future Movement, and this list also is allied with the Lebanese forces. And then again, we have another list that is reportedly supported by Baha Hariri. So we see some of these same dynamics that were playing out in Tripoli also playing out in Akkar.
And another area that's very central for Sunni politics in Lebanon is obviously Beirut, Beirut second. Because as you know, Beirut is more or less divided between a Christian Beirut first and a Muslim Beirut second. In Beirut second, Hariri's vacuum is not really being filled by very strong presence from former Future Movement. We only have the list by Fuad Sanyura, former prime minister, big figure in the Future Movement. He's not actually running, but he created a list that includes one main candidate, Qabbani, and allied with a number of different people, a number of different individuals and parties. So he's running with Walid Jumblat, and this actually is the only place where Jumblat and Birri are fighting each other, because they're allied everywhere else. And also Sanyura is defying Hariri's leadership in general by also allying with the Lebanese forces in Zahle. So I know we're talking about Beirut now, but Sanyura as a figure, what he's trying to do, according to what we're hearing, the analysis, is that he's trying to be kind of a temporary leader of the Sunni March 14 current in the absence of Hariri. Which reminds us of what?
Right, what happened when Hariri was killed, the elder Hariri was killed. And what happened? Fuad Senhora stepped up and he became the prime minister and sort of was sort of the caretaker, right, for the future movement, at least in that role, you know, prime minister, until Saad Hariri came back in 2009.
Exactly. And he became a very important symbol of the political establishment because of that leadership role, temporary leadership role. Now we're talking about a very different situation. He's trying to break through and to defy Hariri's absence, but it's not like he's the major player in town. No, like really, when you walk in Beirut today, you see some billboards for Beirut to Wajeh, but you don't really understand that Senhora is telling you, like, let's bring back Rafi Hariri's movement and elect this list. It's not there. It's not strong enough to be seen this way. A guy, a very rich guy, a billionaire who is trying to play Rafi Hariri's role in Beirut today, it seems, is Makhzoumi, Fuad Makhzoumi. Billionaire. Lots of question marks by international journalists around many things. We can talk, dive into them and investigate them later. But Makhzoumi has created a list, and his main discourse in running into the election, or his main proposal running into the election, is to be kind of like this Sunni father figure in Beirut that is anti-Hezbollah, allied with Saudi Arabia, the traditional, you know, allies of the Sunnis. And he is a major clientelist figure because he has a whole network called the Makhzoumi Foundation, which provides aid and services to poor people in Beirut. He's seen as someone with serious chances, but above all, he's seen as someone who's literally painting all of Beirut in red with these slogans of Beirut Badda Alib, similar also to how Hariri used to campaign, in the sense of not including any serious political messages in it. Just saying like, I'm here for you, you know? You want a daddy, I'm your daddy.
Well, I think as well, though, we have to remember that Makhzoumi is a relative newcomer. Yes, he does have the Makhzoumi Foundation and everything, but he only first made it into parliament in the last election. He ran a list back then. He was the only candidate from that list to actually make it into parliament. Whereas if we think back to like what we were talking about with Tripoli, we had all of these Zama that were never really brought completely under any sort of Hariri rule up there. And they've been around for a lot longer, which is different from Makhzoumi, who at least personally hasn't been involved in politics for nearly as long.
Yes, yeah, so you have basically these two figures, Makhzoumi and Senhora, represented by Khabbani in the list, trying to, you know, take over what was left by Hariri's vacuum. And then you have the opposition. The opposition in Beirut second is a very interesting case because it was divided into three lists. Why three? It's really too long of a story to explain. I was involved in a lot of it and I know the details. They would not make you happy to hear them. You know, the details are a bit nasty in a way. But in general, what we have today, let's just give you clearly what options there are in terms of opposition lists. There is Mwatinun Mwatinat, Memfid, again, running their own list, with not a complete list, but six candidates. Beirut Madinati running its own list. And a cocktail of many different activists or figures from the opposition civil society movement coming together with lots of support from different kind of groups in this opposition scene. In the last third list, which is Beirut Tghyir, which I've been criticizing a lot for having very, you know, contrasting agendas, or having people that are, you know, quite clearly not our allies on the list, like Wadah Sadiq, who was working with Hariri as a businessman, as an advertiser for long years and making lots of money. And then recently in 2018, he was still a supporter of Hariri, and he's also right wing. And Hani Ahmadi, supported by Paula Yaoubian, who is quite right wing, and he hates leftists as much as he hates anything in life. So this list has been criticized. At the same time, it is supported by, or it includes many figures that can get votes. So we might see, because we have people like Brahim Naimni, Milham Khalaf, etc.
And interestingly, also, I think it's important to point out, Ahbash is not running with Amal and Hezbollah in Beirut too. They decided to strike out with their own list. which is kind of different, kind of strange, and different from what's going on in Tripoli, right? The Taha Naji is running on the list with Faisal Karami, who is seen to be, you know, close to Hezbollah. But in Beirut, the details of the void are a bit different to cause sort of like a different strategy to take place on that side of the spectrum as well. Okay, so we've spoken about the north, Beirut, and if we keep going down south, we get to Rafiq Hariri's hometown, Saida. Bahia, Rafiq's sister, has been an MP, I think, since 92. She is not running. And really, no one, none of the politicians from the Future Movement are running in Saida. Does that mean that Future's completely out of the picture, though? Not exactly. There is a list with one of the guys who used to run the Future Movement's campaigns, not a politician, but one of the sort of behind the scenes guys. So there's this one list with Yusuf al-Naqib, who is allied with the LF, again in Saida. But then also sort of the traditional powers, it seems, have kind of closed ranks within Saida. So you have Osama Saad, who's not seen as any sort of Hariri guy, right? He was more March 8th, but now he's really staked out an independent position. He's allying with Abdurrahman Bizri, former mayor of Saida, who's actually been on our program before to talk about COVID. And those two are running together for the two Sunni seats in Saida this election.
And there is another opposition list, or two other opposition lists, actually. One with Memfid and another one with different groups or individuals. But also, like, from what we see so far, it's an area where, you know, the opposition is not expected to make any big results, except for Osama Saad, obviously, if you consider Osama Saad an ally or an opposition, which maybe he has been in the last 4 years, 5 years, then you can see him as a very strong actor there, because Osama Saad is quite guaranteed to win this one.
Bizri ran in 2018 as well. I think he got something like 3,000 votes, and Osama Saad got like three times that amount, something on that order. All right, so that's a quick breakdown of at least these four districts, what's going on within the Sunni community, and how these districts are being impacted by the withdrawal of the Future Movement. And we can see from this that there's actually quite a bit of chaos that's introduced here. We have new actors, we have old actors who used to be together on the same list, who are now on different lists running against each other. It's not uniform between Saida, Beirut, Tripoli on up to Akkar. And obviously there are other Sunni areas across the country as well that we don't have time to get into. But at the same time, you can see that within this sort of chaos, there are certain actors who are either trying to preserve some level of cohesiveness. Think of Fuad Sanyora and what he's trying to do, or Mustafa Alush. And then there are others who are trying to move in to fill voids. Makhzoumi, Baha Hariri, obviously Mikati. And then there's also just these, you know, opposition groups who may be able to get a foot in the door in certain districts that have been sort of, you know, Future Movement bastions, and they actually have a chance now because, you know, the Future Movement isn't taking up all the oxygen in the room anymore.
If they benefit of the opportunity, of course, because that's a question.
Right, and just as the traditional political forces seem to be in a sort of chaotic state, so are the opposition forces here. So are the independent and those who call themselves independents, you know?
Now, if we move to the Christian space, it's so annoying to be speaking in these terms, forgive us everyone. If we move to the Christian politics scene, the main vacuum is the weakness or the deterioration of FPM's, you know, control of its voter base or even support in many different areas. One of the primary dynamics that we see is the Lebanese forces trying to say, no, I am the real strong Christian party in this country. I will take over this kind of role from the FPM. That's why most of the LF focuses its campaigning usually against the FPM, because it's a struggle over who is the Zaim of the Christians. Yani, it's not that complex to understand. This is Lebanese politics. One of the areas in which we see the FPM falling apart almost completely is Kesserwen. Kesarwan is a very important area for Aoun.
Right, it was a stronghold since Aoun came back to Lebanon in 2005.
Exactly. And this time, the main allies of Aoun in Kesarwan, his son-in-law, Shamir Rukuz, Namat Frem, the big industrialist, and Mansour Elbon, all of them are, you know, rich or important people who were with the FPM last time, on their lists at least, and were running to be in their blocks, and two of them eventually won and got into parliament. But now, Rukuz is going with Farid Al-Khazen, allying with someone else, and he's planning to create his own party. Frem is running his own thing called Sarkhit Watan, and he's allied with Kataib and with the National Bloc. Faris Saeed is allied with Mansour Elbon, and who had been running with FPM, as we said last time. And Faris Saeed, obviously, is the March 14 discourse kind of guy, if someone doesn't know him. So all of these people are trying to take away from what the FPM is losing in this area. And primarily, it seems to be a battle between those who were on the FPM list last time.
Right. And this just sort of like feeds into this general perception that the FPM is running into a lot of issues right now. You know, when your own son-in-law isn't running on one of your lists, or, you know, your brother-in-law isn't running on your lists, when these candidates who you had brought in last time, maybe they aren't members of the party, but they are taking off and going in their own directions. You know, I don't know to the degree that this actually reflects voters, but it definitely shows something about the political class and how they read the situation.
Another story where FPM also lost their ally is Metin. Tashnak, the Armenian party allied with the FPM for the last many years, still an ally with the FPM, decided to kind of break up in Metin and not go with Brahim Kanaan's list. Brahim Kanaan is a major FPM figure. So Tashnak, the Armenian party, decides to go with Michel Mur instead. Michel Mur, obviously, the son of Liesel Mur, who is obviously the son of Michel Mur. It's a family of Murs who do business and are in politics for some reason. It's always not clear what the main premise of the Mur family is in politics, apart from being there. It's, you know, it's one of those networks that exist, and zaims that exist and created a certain, you know, loyalty.
And an absolute mainstay in Metin politics.
Definitely. But I have to tell this story, Ben, so forgive me. Today we saw a video by Michel Mur saying, "I am not raised as someone who deceives people by proposing an electoral program, and then 4 years later, I haven't accomplished anything and people will hold me accountable for it."
Which, I mean, just complete real politic. Like, okay, yeah, that's actually kind of true.
Yeah, but where is the lie?
But saying the quiet part out loud, you're not supposed to do that, yeah.
So he's basically doesn't have a political program, because why would he? Why would anyone want to be held accountable? And then you have Kataib, another very strong party in Metin. This is actually the only area where Kataib is actually considered like seriously very strong, because Sami Jmail is there, obviously their leader. And they have Elias Hankash, another young MP. And you have businessmen and people, you know, with money who allied with Kataib in this area, like Samir Saliba, who represents an even more right-wing group than Waddah Sadiq's group that we were talking about earlier. This is like super pure neoliberal, like clean capitalism kind of discourse. It's called ACT. And it's also very much Fortinan's discourse and everything. So this is the Kataib list. And they're trying to say we are the opposition list. However, here, as opposed to everywhere we were talking about, there is a very serious and clean, quote-unquote, opposition list, where there's a guy like Jad Ghusum, who has a very solid reputation, not only as a journalist, but as a political commentator and analyst, etc. The list is supported by, like, left-wing social democrat, progressive groups. It's not ideological in one way or another, but it's kind of like, it makes sense in a way to see these different discourses together on one list. So here, actually, such an interesting area, because you have a unified, strong kind of opposition showing, but you also have part of the opposition elite that went with another list, which is Kataib's list, because it's seen as more rewarding electorally on that in that district.
Yeah, and I think we're going to get a bit more into these interests in a little bit, but going down the coast, right? So we talked about Jebel Kesserouin and then down to Metn. And then the next thing you hit is going to be East Beirut, you know, Beirut 1, which is Jemaisi Ashrafieh. It hasn't traditionally been an FPM stronghold or anything, but the FPM has made inroads there. And there, there's quite an interesting race shaping up as well. We spoke about Tashnak not allying with the FPM for the one Armenian seat in Metn, but here they are allying with the FPM, and so quite important as well in East Beirut, I should point out, to have Armenian support, because that's half the seats. There are 8 seats, 4 of them are Armenian. All of them are Christian, but 4 of them are Armenian Christian. And Tashnak is traditionally the strongest Armenian party. So this is one area where a key ally has stuck by the FPM, at least in this district, but it's the most important district that they stick with the FPM. So you have Nicolas Sahnaoui from the FPM running again for the Greek Catholic seat, which he won last time. But another interesting thing with this is the positioning of those parties that are against the FPM, namely the LF and Kataeb. Now, last time they ran together. This time they've decided to part ways. So you have the Kataeb list that is headed by Nadim Jemail, the son of Bashir Jemail, with Jean Talouzian, who is reportedly supported by Antoun Sahnaoui, who is the cousin of Nicolas Sahnaoui.
It's a whole Sahnaoui mess. I mean, we need a Sahnaoui episode at this point.
We do. Getting into the family histories of some of these elites, it's fascinating, you know. And then we have the LF, who currently have Imad Wakim, who is stepping aside, and Ghassan Hasbani, who you might remember, he was the former deputy prime minister of the country. He's moving in to sort of lead things for the LF there. Which, by the way, is something that we see in a lot of districts here. A lot of times you think of, you know, Kataeb, LF as quite close together. I mean, not just for historical reasons, but for a whole host of reasons, political reasons. But every district that they're running in, at least officially, they're on separate lists this time.
Yeah, I mean, both LF and Kataeb are trying to portray themselves as opposition today. But LF is actually in a much stronger position. It has a large bloc already in parliament. It has a lot more funding, and it's headed by Samir Jaja. Don't forget that these parties are patriarchal institutions headed by a man. This explains a lot on why there are these two different organizations, but it's just important to note that, because this might, you know, drive some Kataeb fans crazy. Kataeb has been trying to do some rebranding as an opposition party. However, how real that is during these elections, this is really coming into scrutiny, serious questioning, because in Beirut first, as you were saying, Nadim Jemail, Kataeb's guy, is aligning not with LF, but with Antoun Sahnaoui's, you know, list. And Antoun Sahnaoui is a banker, owner of SJBL. Okay. In Kesserouin, which you talked about earlier, Kataeb is supporting Nahmet Frem. Like, these are people with a lot of money. So the issue of money might have actually determined a lot of Kataeb's alliances. But generally, Kataeb had promised people before these elections, during the October 17 uprising, that from now on, it's serious opposition. It's not going to be dealing with any of these traditional sectarian forces. So yeah, we have FPM, LF, Kataeb, each running their own lists. And you have three opposition lists, or, you know, quote-unquote opposition. One of them, Beirut Medinati again, surprisingly running its own list in Beirut first. Paula Yaoubian.
Which Paula Yaoubian is the only, you know, outsider, quote-unquote outsider, at least, to win in 2018.
Exactly. And she's building on that victory in order to assert herself as a major politician in this district specifically, and a major Armenian politician, let's be clear, trying to take away some of that allegiance or loyalty that Tashnak and the other traditional Armenian parties enjoy. And you have, finally, Muwatinun Muwatinat Memfid, with Sherbil Nahas running personally there, the head of the party, although he had run in Metn last time, with mediocre results. This time the party is much bigger, the situation is different. We had, you know, many different developments in the last few years, but we'll see how Sharb el-Nahas is going to perform in Beirut first. But here we come back to the families. We have Sharb el-Nahas running on this seat, the Greek Catholic seat. You have Nada Sahnawi, the head of Beirut Medinati, and then you have Nicolas Sahnawi aiming for the same seat, and then you have another
Nahas another is in the Nahas. Mix, and then there's one other name that, yeah. I mean, essentially the race for the Greek Catholic seat, which I think it's interesting that this is another interesting race to watch this year, because in 2018 there was a big, you know, battle royale. Everybody had their eyes on this seat because it was Nicolas Sahnawi representing the FPM going up against Michel Faraon, you know, longtime MP, former minister, everything. Sahnawi ended up winning that contest, and now again it's he's got another battle on his hands, potentially with Sharb el-Nahas. If Sharb el-Nahas does better in East Beirut than he did in Metten 4 years ago. But one thing I want to mention really quickly was Mumford is only running 4 candidates out of 8 in East Beirut. They're not running any Armenians, which I find to be kind of striking, because Mumford, they're running in all 15 districts. They've got lists there, right? Or they've got allies there. And they've got this national program, all of this stuff. But here, in the constituency, you know, that was the only constituency that any of the outsider groups actually broke through last time, because we know the electoral law is very, very hard for newcomers, right? Here, they decide to not even contest the 4, you know, half of the seats, not engage with the Armenian community in the biggest area where Lebanese Armenians are.
Yeah, it's important here to note, I agree with you. It's important here to note that I don't think any of these groups really expected to run alone. Paul Ayoubian and Beirut Medinati were very advanced in the negotiations when they fell apart. Very advanced. It was about 1 seat. And Sharb el-Nahas, I don't think he went in being prepared to run a full list at all, because even him running in Beirut first was announced absolutely last minute. This was a matter of preparation, knowing really how to go in the election with a strong footing. This division is going to make it hard for at least 2 of these forces, if not everyone, to make it through or to make a big impact in this area.
So I don't want to get completely bogged down here on this one subject, but I think there was one other thing. We're talking about Christian politics that we absolutely do have to talk about, because so many of the leaders are there, and that's up in the north. North 3, which is Bishare, Batroun, Kura, and Zgharta. Multiple large Christian movements all in the same district competing against each other. And so Gibran Basile runs in Batroun. Sleyman Frangieh, often cited as, you know, also a potential presidential contender, runs in Zgharta. You have Strida Jaja, who is the wife of Samir Jaja, also a contender for the presidency, running in Bishare. And then you also have some other big names like, it always used to be Boutros Harab. And this election, he's handing the reins over to Mejid, his son, to run in Batroun against Gibran Basile.
New faces.
Absolutely, absolutely. Younger faces at very least.
new first names, let's just say that.
And history seems to be kind of repeating itself this time around. Because, I mean, the political forces are the same, but have maybe a slightly different composition or different alliances than they had last time. So again, we have Gibran Basile. We have not Fadi Saad running with the LF, but instead Ghayath. I only get one of the names out at a time.
Ghayath Yazbek
is the director of news for MTV. And then the third person running, obviously, is Mejid Harb, son of Boutros, but he's doing something a bit different. So when Boutros ran in 2018, he was on this tactical alliance with the Frangieh over in Zgharta, but part of the same larger district. This time around, Mejid is not allying with Frangieh. Instead, he has an alliance with Kataeb and with Michel Mouawad, which from just a an ideological perspective, a political perspective, makes a lot more sense, I think, than the previous arrangement. But that's also quite interesting because essentially they're taking Mawad away from the FPM. And here we see sort of like what we were talking about with a lot of large figures who were previously associated with the FPM going a different route. Nahmat Frem, for instance, Mansour Bon. And so here we have Michel Mouawad, instead of running with the FPM and thereby helping Jibran Basile and his list get elected, he's going with Majid Harb and the Kataib.
And Kataib even let go of their guy Samer Saadi to make this happen, to support Majd Harb primarily. The idea there, what it looks obviously on the ground, it's they're trying to have one strong candidate who will take the preferential votes on the Maronite seat so that they can basically kick Jibran Basile out of parliament. This is a project that is shared by the alliance between Mouawad, Kataib and Majd Harb and the LF, both of which want the same thing, which is to get rid of Basile. But in order to do so, just a note here, Majd Harb is running along a relatively unknown Joel Hwayek, whose name is not in politics. The Lebanese forces went with Ghayas Yazbek, the strong Maronite man, and also another relatively unknown female candidate. So basically in both cases, what we're seeing is they don't want to have another candidate in order not to dilute the vote of the main Maronite candidate on the list, so they get someone who is a bit of a lightweight. And this is a behavior that we saw in the last election as well, by the way, which is why the number of women candidates is always higher in Lebanon than the number of women MPs or the percentage of women MPs, because these women are usually encouraged to run on seats that are not winning.
Right, and some of these women who were candidates realize this and end up feeling used because of it, you know, because that's what is going on.
But despite this strong battle between the LF and the Kataib and Basil and everyone against each other and all of these things, in this district, we have another case where the opposition kind of successfully brought together a serious list. It's not everyone. Memfid is not in the list. It's running its own list. However, there's a list called Shamaluna, which is a different, basically, campaign from others because it brought a lot of different candidates from many groups and they contested in kind of a primary and eventually they adopted a list of candidates. But the interesting thing, obviously the opposition are outsiders and they are in opposition, but you have Jibran Basile talking about himself as an outsider. You have the Lebanese forces. When the LF say things like, we can do this and that, I just want to like put things in perspective. The LF has been in parliament and has had some good MPs, some very bad MPs in terms of how much they do in parliament. But it's been a force that's been in government and in parliament for many, many years in Lebanon. And we know that, you know, many of these people are just there to be there. You know, Sitrita Jaja is Samir Jaja's wife, but also someone who is independently a very popular figure as a person in Msharri. This is why she is in parliament. But when she was elected to parliament, she barely attended any sessions. She barely had any parliamentary activity.
To be fair, there's a lot of competition for the least active members of parliament. LCPS did a study years ago that there's a part of this that a nice bar chart. And yes, Jaja was in there, but there were several who were also way worse.
Yeah, it's a good competition. Race to the bottom.
The other interesting thing I think about this race in the north is that it's kind of unique, because it has the highest percentage of expats who are registered. As a percentage of all the voters in a district who are registered to vote, the expats are about 10%. And so in this district, expats actually have a much larger voice and potentially can make more of an impact.
So there are some serious, basically, contests in the Christian space today when it comes to many important seats, as you said. But in general, in many areas, there is a serious competition to see who's going to be the most strongest Christian party between FPM and the LF, but also who's going to be the strong opposition winning these Christian seats. If we put all of this aside for a second, or if we step back from all of this, we see that generally, these are the major two trends in Lebanon today electorally. The huge competition on Sunni seats, but also very chaotic, very messy, and without any serious opposition that is, you know, across the country kind of pushing in these areas. You have the you know, in the Christian area, it's a different situation, but also there's a vacuum that people are trying to fill. There is a question about what is the real opposition or not in all areas, but most specifically in Christian areas. And there is a diversity in terms of what actual opposition lists exist. If we move to the Druze section of the Druze politics in Lebanon, we see a different situation. We see Jumblatt getting worried maybe about losing some popularity, but mainly things are kind of the same. Jumblatt is still aligning with the Lebanese forces in Shouf Alay, like they did last time, and Talal Arslan, the other less popular, much less popular, much less powerful Druze leader in the Alay district, is allied, of course, with the FPM as usual. But the new thing is that Wiam Wahab, the, I don't know how to describe him, the, you know, unique, eccentric Syrian regime affiliated, but also close to some Gulf countries with a bit of
he
a foul mouth.
He seems to know everyone.
He's kind of like a Joker card that no one relies on because he's always insulting people on television. That's kind of how to summarize. Anyway, Wiam Wahab was, in the last elections, was very close to winning a seat, him or someone on his list, in Shouf Alay. He was very, very close, almost like a few votes away. And this time, he decided to go into actually Arslan and FPM's alliance, which is, you know, the new thing. This means that whatever votes Wahab can channel into this list will make a difference. If he got individually as many votes as Arslan almost last time, it means that this list is stronger than it was last time. This is why Walid Jumblatt now is talking about how he's being, you know, surrounded by these evil forces who hate Mukhtara and all of
this. But here as well, we see how the opposition is playing into this in independent lists as well, right? I remember 4 years ago, Shouf Alay was mentioned a whole lot when talking about civil society groups, partially because the electoral threshold was so low, and so therefore they had a much better chance of actually breaking in. They didn't end up breaking in. Is this year any different, though?
It might be. We know that overall, the sentiment, the public sentiment in Shouf Alay is supportive of the October 17 uprising and what it stands for. It's generally more accepting of secular slash leftist discourse. So it depends on who is mobilizing. It also includes populations that are more accepting of Christian right-wing nationalist discourse. And the list that has been put together by, you know, quote-unquote opposition is a mix of so many of these different profiles that you would ultimately get so many different candidates getting each like 1,000 or 2,000 votes and eventually making up a good number for the list. This is kind of the approach, if you want, for this kind of alliance. Very similar to Beirut Second and the Beirut Tahrir list, where also many different celebrities or activists were put together. In Shouf Alay, we have people like Mark Dow, who is an ally of Kataib, and also other people who are not allies of Kataib on the same list. You have people who are a bit more right-wing than left-wing, etc. Like, it's a diverse list, but Lihaqi, the main actor that formed the list in 2018...
That's your group, right?
That's my group, the group that I've been with for the last 4 years. And when we co-founded Lihaqi back in 2018... we had the major say in how the opposition list happened in Shouf Alay. This time, Lihaqi decided to go with local campaigns that that have democratic processes to decide things. And this led to some outcomes that are not aligned with the political group's principles, which is why it withdrew eventually from this election. The other opposition list is Memfid, again, running their own list. We will see how the opposition vote basically will divide between these two. But the celebrity status and the brand and all of these things are all on one side. On the other side, there's only the national recognition of Memfid, of Sharm El Nahas, of this party, etc. All of these lists and candidates. But in Shouf Alay, on the ground, the networks are mostly related to groups and activists that are involved with the other opposition lists, which is called Tuwahadna Litaghir. We unified for change.
Right. Going a little bit further south, though, it's quite interesting to see, well, we actually have some unified opposition lists. Once you get down into South 2 and 3 especially, you see all of a sudden, oh, okay, well, let me back up for a second and say, first off, the election dynamics there aren't as crazy, right? A lot of these are, you know, Shia majority areas, and there you don't have some vacuum like you do in the Sunni space. You don't have some perception that, you know, the major power is losing things like you do with the FPM amongst Christian voters. Here you have Hezbollah, which is still very, very strong, and it's, you know, unshakable alliance with Amal, which is not as strong and not as popular, but it doesn't matter so much, maybe, because they are in such a strong alliance with Hezbollah. And if you remember, 4 years ago, the strategy in these districts, essentially, which was successful, was, hey, we're just going to, the electoral thresholds are so high, we're just going to get out the vote and push those sky high so that if other lists do have voters, if people don't want to vote for us, well, under the electoral law, they won't even be able to enter parliament anyway. This time around, we still have the, you know, very firm support, especially for Hezbollah, the, you know, the anchor of this, of these tickets. But the opposition is different, right?
Yeah, very different. In South 2 and South 3, we have basically the only two areas where all opposition forces, basically, all known opposition forces came together under one list. It's called the same as well, almost the same between the two areas. And it includes people that are, you know, more left-wing, more center, more pro March 14, more pro March 8 in their kind of discourse. But overall, a kind of combination that where most factions of the opposition are represented. مواطنون مواطنات في دولة منفد decided to enter alliances in these two districts. They entered alliances with other groups, while in all other areas we were talking about, they were running their own lists. So this also tells you that all of these different actors in the opposition know that the only way to break through is to pass this threshold, which is very high, which means that you need to put all of these votes together. There's no other way to actually break through and get an MP or even just appear to be strong in this area unless you get under one list.
Yeah, I find, stepping back for a minute, I find it very interesting that where things are sort of calm for the powers that be, the opposition is able to get together and form cohesive lists, where everything is sort of going off the walls in other parts of the country, the opposition is similarly just not united.
Yeah, I agree. And this takes us to the discussion of what basically drives so much of this politics right now. Speaking of all of the vacuums, we're talking about political opportunities. Political opportunities are usually exploited by people who have the resources or the planning and the institutions to do so. In general, opposition is not structured in large parties. It's structured in small networks with one or two celebrities or, you know, famous figures. So you don't have this institutional infrastructure to be benefiting from this opportunity. This is a very structural problem for the opposition in Lebanon. And it's a sign that it's not really very grown yet. It's basically in this infancy phase where everyone's trying to do their own thing rather than organize in large parties, with the exception of Memphis, maybe. But the other very, very central idea here is that those who usually exploit these political opportunities during economic and financial crisis are people with money. Money is what you need to run a campaign in the elections.
Absolutely. Sine qua non. Like, you have to have some cash in order to get into the business at 100%.
And we see so many businessmen getting into this business now, like so many across Lebanon, and not aligning with the traditional forces, as we were saying, in many cases. In some, they are. But you have, for example, as we mentioned, the two biggest industrialists, Michel Daher and Naamat Frem, both breaking away from the FPM. We have the opposition bourgeoisie, maybe, or the capitalist class that is supportive of change of opposition politics, coalescing in organizations like Kuluna Irada and Nahwa al-Watan, trying to get as much money as possible to support unified opposition lists. This failed because in most areas we don't have a unified opposition list. It doesn't mean that these people are not supporting anyone, but it means a lot of these businessmen are going to say this is not worth the investment if it's not guaranteed to break through and eventually create some kind of parliamentary bloc that represents us. So it's a very sensitive issue for businessmen trying to invest some money in politics. But we see these moneyed interests almost everywhere. And maybe the most interesting political actor, apart from people who are directly running, like Frem and Daher, etc., there are people like Marwan Khairuddin, who is the owner of Al-Mawarid Bank, who's also a banker with a huge stake in what's going to happen in Lebanon in the next few years, who's running with Birri, with the approval of Jumblat, etc. You have Antoun Sahnawi, a very different kind of actor. He doesn't want to be the face in the politics. He wants to be supporting people who eventually will represent him and his interests in parliament. So we have people like Michel Mawad being funded by Antoun Sahnawi and Raji Saad.
This is based on your own information that you've collected.
Yeah, and everything I'm mentioning right now is based on people leaking the information from within the camps. It's not like basically analysis as much as sources, obviously. You have Michel Mawad being funded by Antoun Sahnawi, Raji Saad and Abu Fa'our on Jublat's lists, also funded by Antoun Sahnawi. You have three MPs in Beirut or three candidates in Beirut, Talouzian, as we said, Nadim Jmail and Asma Ondrawas on this payroll. If this succeeds, Antoun Sahnawi will have 5 to 6 MPs in Lebanon in the parliament, although he doesn't have a political party and he's not a politician. What is this political actor that is not a politician or a political party? It's an economic interest with the ability to reason and buy some political loyalty and alliances.
Right, and Antoun Sahnawi is, I mean, he's a huge businessman, head of SGBL, which is one of the, you know, big banks in the country. He has extensive interests in Solidaire, for instance. His feet are being held to the fire with this financial crisis just because of the massive amounts that, you know, that he potentially, I assume, would stand to lose if things get a lot worse. And so you can see now him moving to defend those interests. Because you, in order to defend them, you can't just play economics. Now the economic has become a political question.
100%. Because when you say things get way worse for him, it might mean better for the country, right? Because if
And relatively speaking, he's a very rich man. I'm sure he's going to be fine. But
yeah, he's not going to starve. But if, for example, a plan like what Hassan Diab's government presented, we talked about it last week, would have been very bad news for bankers. And they know that in the future, there will be laws and policies passed by the Lebanese parliament in order to overcome the crisis. And these policies will have a cost for the banking sector 100%. And we might have a fall guy here or there. We might have a change in the financial system that reveals certain things. So for someone to be in parliament like Marwan Khairuddin is a good investment right now because you also get immunity apart from other things. It's a complicated situation. One takeaway, I think, is that there are many forms of ultra-rich people going into politics, like Makhzoumi, like Frem, like Antoun Sahnawi, Michel Daher, etc., each making their own political choices. There is also a lot of interest and money from the opposition because the opposition is starving compared to the Sulta, which is why you have people like Naamat Frem being able to bring these people around him, these opposition figures or members around him, like National Bloc, like Josephine Zghaib and Kesarwen, etc. That's also, you know, why a lot of people prefer to go with whatever list will be supported by Kuluna Irada or Nahwa Al-Watan, because without funding, you cannot like really compete with these monsters.
And I find it quite interesting that some of these candidates decided to go with Kataib, because think back a few years, you know, Kataib last election had 3 MPs, like they were one of the, you know, small parties. And for Kataib, which has such a huge role in Lebanese history, I mean, people were wondering, like, is Kataib done? But yeah. Now, perhaps because they were seen sort of as weaker and, you know, trying to rebuild and everything, it would seem natural to me that all of these allies see, oh, okay, well, we'll go along with this party that's a bit weaker but still has this national stage. Instead of going with, you know, one of the other choice would probably be the LF. But with the LF, maybe you don't get quite as much of a say because they're a lot stronger than Kataib is.
And a lot more money, you know, than Kataib. So with the LF, you don't control the money situation if you're a relatively small businessman, because whatever funding you're getting for the elections, the LF probably has more, as you see from literally every corner of Lebanon where they have billboards right now.
And added on to that, you get sort of cover of being opposition, right? Because one of the things that Sami Jamil has really worked hard to do since he came in is to totally rebrand the party. And one big piece of this is to say, oh no, we are opposition. You know, before other people resigned, you know, Kataib pulled their ministers out and went into the opposition. And so they have sort of this, not too long of a track record, but more of a track record than, say, the LF in saying, no, we're actually opposition, and here's why, and here's how, and here's, you know, how we differ from the Sulta, etc. And so if you're a Naamat Frim, somebody like that who ran with the FPM last time, caucused with them, you can basically say, no, I'm not with the ruling power that has, you know, not been able to overcome any of these problems in Lebanon. And I don't know how much that message will actually resonate with people, how much people will actually believe somebody like Naamat Frim is an outsider, but it does provide at least a veneer of being on the outside, at least more than, I mean, if you were running again with the FPM, there's no chance you can really claim that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And if we step back and look at this political economy of elections, we see that the business elite, the banking elite, etc., is spread across many different lists, many different camps, and this is not weird. This is not surprising. This is how elites work probably everywhere. In the US, you have the economic elite spread among the Democrats and the Republicans. It's the same in almost any modern capitalistic country, because if you have the representation across many different camps, then you are more powerful than being in one camp that might be ruling today, but you might be falling with him if he falls tomorrow.
Never put all your eggs in one basket.
And if you're a businessman, you never do that. So that's why businessmen in politics are quite calculated people, let's say.
Right. All right. Well, I think we're going to more or less need to leave it there. There's so much more to talk about here, obviously, and we barely scratched the surface with the lists, I feel, and you know, the electoral alliances and everything. But I hope that we've at least gone through enough and given enough granularity to give everyone sort of a general idea of what's going on. And you can sort of fill in the blanks if you go and look at the lists and places that we haven't described. More or less, I mean, every locality is going to have its own specific rules and things going on, which is one of the reasons why elections are so fascinating here in Lebanon. But I hope that we've at least, you know, given enough of a taste of sort of these larger trends that are happening and that are going to be affecting how the elections proceed in a couple of weeks. I know for sure one of the things that we didn't quite get into that I think would have been great to include if we had time this week, how all of these alliances and strategies and trends actually affect sort of on the ground, the campaigns themselves, the rhetoric they're using, the political positioning they're using. I mean, yeah, everybody's an outsider now, right? But how do you actually justify that in your rhetoric? And how are you employing that? Who is, you know, the enemy for all of these different varying groups? And we're going to be getting a lot more into that next week because we really didn't have time this week.
At the end, elections are a moment where people are trying to convince you to make a certain choice. So rhetoric and discourse is super important. And what we talked about today is actually the grounds that can create one outcome or another. These alliances that we saw, they are shaped by the law, they are shaped by money, they are shaped by so many calculations, and they will make, you know, one or another outcome possible. But then the rhetoric is what pushes for one of these outcomes, what, you know, drives momentum for a certain, like, opposition list or another, a certain Sulta list or another, how they portray the problem, the solution, etc. So it's going to be exciting to delve into that next week. And until then, I'm Nizar Hassan.
I'm Benjamin Red.
And this has been the Lebanese Politics Podcast.
The The Lebanese Politics Podcast is brought to you by me, Benjamin Red, Nizar Hassan, who also produces it, and the music was by Omar Al-Fil.